Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
It is 8:15 now on this chilly Wednesday morning, and it's going to be chilly all day today. A lot of clouds, so it's going to feel maybe a little bit colder than it did yesterday. And we got some real cold weather coming up next week, and we'll keep you updated as to all of that. We're talking about Governor Landry's plan to start this homeless homeless center on France Road. And we've spoken about it yesterday. We're talking about it today. We just got off the phone with Joe Heron Mueller, Director of Community Engagement for Unity of Greater New Orleans. And now Eugene Green joins us, our friend, New Orleans City Council Member. Good morning, Council Member. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine. Good to talk to you and your listeners.
Thank you. One thing that I think is important is that we talk about the homeless, and I think we need to make sure that everybody understands that are homeless people. And sometimes that gets lost. And I know it sounds silly, Eugene, but sometimes I don't think people realize that they don't want to see it. They want it out of sight, out of mind. But these are people that have issues and have problems and need help. So let's talk.
They also live in the United States of America. So we have to abide by certain rules and regulations, or at least the city does. So that's been our concern also, because, you know, we've been relocating people for the last year. Over 750 people relocated. That's why there's no longer a Chapultepec encampment, no longer a Claiborne Avenue encampment. So we kind of know how to do it and respect the rights of the people who are being relocated. And that's our concern as much as anything else, in addition to the fact that the nearby communities should have been given some notice, at least had some idea that it was going to happen. Maybe the input could have been sought. At the end of the day, the governor controls the land, he controls the funding, he has the executive order power. It would have happened anyway, but that's what you hear on the city side, concern for the nearby residents in terms of not having them have a plan, and also making sure that the rights of those who are relocated are respected according to the Constitution.
The residents near France Road in your district, right?
Yes, Pontchartrain Park, Gentilly Woods, but also people forget that there are businesses along France Road and Old Gentilly Road and Chef Highway, and communication with them is important. It's not great when they just find out in the media that there's going to be an encampment for 200 people on France Road and they don't have any say in it at all. I think sometimes people confuse a neighborhood having say with a neighborhood having veto power. They weren't going to be able to veto it. You know, but the bottom line is that there was no communication. But it's open right now, Tommy. At the end of the day, it started at 5 a.m. They're picking up people. Our job now is to work with the state, provide whatever support is necessary. We haven't been asked, but as a city, we will, through our own Office of Homeless Services and Strategies, work with the state to provide the services that are necessary to help the people who are there transition properly back into society.
Because the people that live near where the homeless are being moved from aren't necessarily happy about it either. And that's where the, I guess, not in my backyard thing, however you want to phrase it, comes in. What is the optimum solution here? Permanent housing? And I guess let's take a step back. A lot of people, or some of them that are homeless, do you have any percentage are working?
No. And I'm going to find out soon, because according to those who are working, additional assistance, which is designed to get them into housing quicker, so they're going to prioritize them. But no, at the end of the day, I don't really know that I think that percentage is as high as people think. Now, remember, we're talking about those who are unhoused, who are living outside on the street. Mm-hmm. We have many more people who are technically homeless. They stay at the New Orleans Mission, the Ozanam Inn, Odyssey House, and places like that. This was to remove people from the streets, especially from the French Quarter and Superdome area, for example. So those numbers are going to be smaller than the overall homeless numbers, but I don't have the number of people who are working. I don't know that I think that the people who are working on, who are living on the streets are housed, are working in jobs, honestly, because I go to homeless encampment cleanups every week, every other week. We do them every other Wednesday, and very quietly, we've relocated hundreds of people. But I can't say that I've talked to people who said, I just got back this morning from work. I mean, we have a mental health challenge that's on the streets of New Orleans, on the streets of urban areas. People move here because there are services available to them. Even Unity of New Orleans has said that 75% of the people that they've relocated have mental health challenges. We're not going to overcome that in the very near future, but it is something to recognize. It's not because the vast majority of people are not out on the streets living in the cold, living at corners because the rent is too high or because their jobs don't give them the stability to be able to get into apartments. It's important to just recognize because part of humanity is providing services based on what you see as a need or what you understand to be a need. At the end of the day, we have a mental health challenge crisis on the streets.
A lot of different angles to it. I was going by what your colleague, Councilmember Leslie Harris, told me yesterday about providing transportation for people from the governor's facility, I'll call it that, on France Road to get to work and also to medical appointments. We'll pick it up here. We come back with Eugene Green, New Orleans City Council member. 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Council Member Eugene Green about the governor's facility to house the homeless until after Mardi Gras. So when it comes to the governor's plan, Councilman, do you think it's a good idea? Would you like to get everybody together at the table and maybe talk about some tweaks here or there? Is this a sustainable thing for after Mardi Gras? Thoughts on all of that?
I think that the community and elected officials, for example, could offer strong suggestions and get community support, for example. For example, when you have something like this that you announce on Monday and it's going to open on Wednesday, there are people out there who are sincere. There are churches. There are people who live in communities who say, well, look, I might be willing to help, depending on what the need is, volunteer support, having a facility where people can come and do certain things, for example, at the nearby churches. But that option wasn't presented. I think that's the biggest resentment that you have. I think everybody recognizes that it was unhealthy. It is unhealthy for people to be living at the corner of Elysian Fields and Decatur Street in a sleeping bag in the cold, especially as we're going to experience next week. We were working in that right direction. So now it's open, Tommy, and to your listeners, it's open. So my job now is to work with the community, but also to offer services to the state of Louisiana, involving potentially the community, to make sure that those services are provided. I did visit the site. I was told that there's going to be a shuttle that takes everybody to whatever their appointment is, to whatever their need is. We want to make that happen. There might have been people in the community who can participate and support this shuttle process, you know, depending on how it works. But nobody was given that input. But it's now open, so we have to do what we can to make sure that it's the best service provided, that it focuses on humanity, it focuses on the needs of the community, and those services that are needed get delivered. Tommy, I appreciate this time because I want all of our listeners to know it's going to always be a challenge in New Orleans relative to homelessness. Our weather is good, save the month of January and February at certain times, and people come here all the time because of our hospitality, because of the services that we provide, and there are significant services. It's not a mistake that in other areas around New Orleans, nobody has really a homeless shelter. It's because they tell them that there are resources nearby, and there are in the city of New Orleans. So we're going to be dealing with the issue, but the idea of people sleeping on the streets and in abandoned houses where they are dying of overdoses and where they're subject to crime and things like that, we also have to balance the fact that that is not acceptable in a city such as ours.
Let me talk about Mardi Gras with you real quick. What with the SEER 1 rating, what's that likely to look like, Eugene, and how is that likely to change? And I'll go back to the conversation I had with Arthur Hardy, and he said, you know, a guy in a mask dragging an ice chest down the street, That's a Sierra One nightmare, and I'm paraphrasing here, but that's exactly kind of what Mardi Gras is. How do you balance all of that?
Well, I think that you kind of asked it in a way that's going to make it a challenge for me to answer. I don't know exactly how you balance it. At the end of the day, our goal is to have as many people possible as possible together to celebrate and to stand outside of a passing vehicle on corners on the streets. However, I will say this. I'm very confident that the federal government working with the city and state is going to have in place the maximum amount of security. There are going to be so many law enforcement officers here. And those concerns that you mentioned are very important. People should call in what they see. If you suspect that something is going on, if you suspect and you see somebody with an ice chest and you think that that is something that needs to be looked at, there are cameras in place. There are going to be more cameras in place. There are going to be more nearby officers. They'll inquire. They'll ask. But I'll ask all of our citizens to be on alert and recognize that in this time, very honestly, be sure to kind of do the right thing and, you know that you could be watched. If an officer asks you something, it's not because he's profiling you in particular. It's something that needs to be done to keep us all secure. If you can't drive down a particular street, it's not because the city of New Orleans is closing down. It's because there are security issues that need to be addressed. It's going to be a challenging time, but we're going to come through it like we come through it with every major event in the city of New Orleans. Mardi Gras is going to be fun. The Super Bowl is going to be fun. And then guess what? Right after that, we're going to prepare. Right after Mardi Gras, we're going to prepare for Jazz Fest and those 100,000 people that come in town. And it's going to be successful.
Yep, French Quarter Fest, too. Thank you, Councilmember Eugene Green. And the only thing I would add is that if you don't feel safe at Mardi Gras, don't go. But that's always your right and your option to do it. But I personally don't want to see it changed so substantially that it's like a lockdown area like Washington, D.C. was before the inauguration. We'll take a break, come back, and talk with Devin Bartolotto about the New Orleans terror attack. She's an anchor at Channel 4. I'll explain more on the other side of the news here on WWL. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I was saying before the break, I wish somebody would take Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and put it together chronologically with the flash forwards and flashbacks so you could watch a story beginning to end. And that's fiction, of course. But in real life, Devin Bartolotto, WWL Louisiana reporter and anchor, has kind of done that with the timeline of the Bourbon Street attack. Good morning, Devin. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. How are the kids? Or kid?
Kid, she's good. She doesn't stop moving. I just dropped her off at school.
How old now?
She's like a little less than a year and a half old, like almost 17 months old. So she's talking up a mile a minute.
Change your life just a little bit, Mom?
It's so much fun. I love it.
Okay. It'd save her every moment because it'll be gone in a heartbeat. Let's talk about what you put together here, because I think it's interesting.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The way you put the whole story together with Shamsuddin Jabbar's attack and when it first started, when he was first captured on video. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Devin, you're a good storyteller. Have at it.
Oh, my. All right. Well, so this was kind of a collaborative thing between producer Tori Josie and I. She's our producer at 10 o'clock, and she is an EarthCam lover. So she always put the EarthCam in our shows and has for years. So when she heard that some of these videos were starting to be released and we had a little bit better idea of a timeline of when Jabbar was in New Orleans, she started to take a look. Now, the thing with the EarthCam is unless somebody takes a screenshot, after 24 hours, it disappears forever. So she was entirely reliant on what photos people had taken screenshots of in the 24 hours after this attack and what they've taken videos of as well. And she was able to go through and find little pieces where we see the cooler that at least one of the coolers that Jabbar dropped off on Bourbon Street, and also a video of him riding a bike through the French Quarter in October. So do you want me to take a look at the day of or start way back?
Well, let's start way back. Tell me the whole story. We had a couple of minutes here.
So, I mean, we know that he came on Halloween to kind of scope things out. And what Tori and I did was combined with the video that the FBI released, which is recorded on Meta Glasses on Halloween of him biking down Bourbon Street. We kind of pieced this all together in a timeline. So we know that on Halloween, he came in the afternoon. He was riding through the French Quarter on a bike. He was recording on Meta Glasses first at Bourbon in St. Louis, and he kind of takes a whole ride through the French Quarter. So we see him on the Earth Cam at Bourbon in St. Peter at 4:25 p.m. He went down Royal, down Canal. We see him crossing Canal at Camp Street, then turn onto Charters. And the FBI released a photo of him on the security camera at 4:54 p.m. So we know for at least an hour he was riding through the French Quarter on Halloween in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Then we know he came back on November 10th. We only have one photo that was released yesterday of that. So Tori and I are kind of keeping an eye on what else might be released. And she's also currently combing through whatever surveillance videos that she can find from the French Quarter right now of that date to try and find things.
What was he doing in Gonzales? Do you know?
So we've been trying to figure that out, and we don't actually have video of what he was doing in Gonzales on New Year's Eve. However, we do know that he was driving an electric Ford F-150. And when I looked it up yesterday, there's basically no way he could have made it from Houston to New Orleans without charging that truck at least once.
Okay.
So that, I don't want to speculate. However, at some point he had to have stopped and plugged that truck in order to make it to New Orleans.
Would that be at somebody's home or at a charging station, or do you know?
Honestly, I don't know. And we don't have any photos or videos of that. I'm sure the FBI does.
You see that keen investigative mind working here, right, Devin?
Yeah, I mean, you're just going to have to. This is one of those like kind of wait and see things. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are thousands of hours of videos and photos, and you know, everybody's got a camera on their house or on their doorbell these days. So I cannot imagine how many videos are out there of this guy.
One thing, and you can take us through January 1st when we come back, because we could do traffic right now, but and the day of the attack. But one thing I still don't understand was why he waited until 3:15 in the morning. And I guess they're still trying to figure that out. But you can pick it up at 12:39 a.m. on the 1st when we come back about the truck and the coolers in the bed turning off a North Rampart on the Governor Nichols in the Quarter. 8:50, 10 till 9, more with Devin Bartolotta, the timeline of the Bourbon Street attack in detail when we return on WWL. Right now, a look at traffic. 8:55, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Devin Bartolotta, WWL Louisiana reporter and anchor. She's pieced together with EarthCam live stream video and a producer at Channel 4, the Bourbon Street attackers' actions. Let's pick it up January 1st, 2025, the morning of the attack, Devin. I also want to focus really on the EarthCam stuff and how these coolers got moved around. So go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, that was one of the most interesting parts of this. It's something that the FBI was not able to release, but we were able to find. So I guess we'll start at the beginning here. This is January 1st, 2025. 12:39 a.m. And what we're doing here is taking everything that the FBI has released, every photo, every video that we have of the attacker, and piecing it together chronologically. It took hours and hours, but it was worth it to kind of understand how the movements started. And if you're listening to this, I wish I had a map to show you. So please just, I guess, imagine as best you can. So 12:39, we know that he's at Governor Nichols in North Rampart, parks the car nearby. That's kind of on the eastern, more residential part of the French Quarter, and then walks down Governor Nichols Street onto Bourbon Street. So the first time that we know right now that he was on Bourbon Street was 1:48 a.m., and he's dragging an ice chest on wheels down Bourbon Street. There's two videos of him doing that. One of them, he's a little bit closer to Orleans, and then he drags it a little bit closer down to kind of closer to St. Peter Street. And this is really strange. We see him on video that the FBI released. He waves for kind of a long time. He waves at a camera or waves down the street. and then turns around and leaves the cooler and heads back in the direction of Governor Nichols. So that's cooler number one. And the waving is still unexplained. A lot of people have asked me about it, and I don't know if it was a wave to kind of make it look more natural that he was leaving the cooler, you know, like he was saying he saw someone and was leaving, or if he was deliberately waving at the Earth cam that is parked at that location.
All right, cooler number two.
Cooler number two is at 2:20 a.m., so about 25 minutes later, and that gets placed at Bourbon and Toulouse. And we don't have timestamps of the video, the videos and the pictures on the Earth cam. However, you can see that cooler really clearly on the Earth cam in several photos. And there are crowds of people. I mean, you've seen Bourbon Street on a big night. Crowds of people inches away from this cooler that was packed with explosives. And at some point, somebody or multiple people dragged that cooler down the street so that it was originally parked at Bourbon and St. Peter, and it's at Bourbon and Orleans by the time of the attack, because someone unrelated to the crime, the FBI has cleared them, drug this cooler almost a full block.
Which was loaded with a bomb.
Yes, loaded with a bomb, and we know that there was all kinds of shrapnel inside as well.
Devin, let me just move ahead here because we only have 2 minutes left. One thing I'm wondering about is how did the police, or do we know how the FBI got from a guy drives his truck past a police car down Bourbon Street, runs people over, hits the lift hoist or whatever you call that thing, gets out, starts shooting the police, kill him. How did they then backtrack to the coolers and explosive devices?
So that was interesting, and we kind of got some clues by listening to the dispatch calls, which tell us that, first of all, we see on the Earth cam that they cleared the street. So the cooler that we know it is at Bourbon and Orleans is still there, and the street is clear, and there are police everywhere. Then we see the police kind of close in on it in another screenshot from the Earth cam. And then at 3:44 a.m., we hear on dispatch a first responder is requesting a bomb dog. We don't know if that's for cooler number one or cooler number two, but at some point in that hour, they discovered one of the bombs.
Devin, y'all have done remarkable work at Channel 4. I don't know if this helps or not. Somebody texted in and said Tanger Outlet has car chargers in Gonzales. I don't know if that helps or not with Earth Cam. I just thought I'd pass it along. Thank you.
Oh,
I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Y'all do a great job. Devin Bartolotto, WWL Louisiana reporter and anchor. We're going to come back. Talk about how people like the attacker become radicalized, and can they become de-radicalized after they've gone down that rabbit hole? Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us. Back in a flash, WWL.